to another episode of Badass Outdoors, podcast number 2. My name is Ashley, and I am the Ash of Badass Outdoors, which is a salmon and steelhead guided business that I started in 2012. And I started that because, one, I love fishing and spent a lot of time doing it. I was very fortunate to basically be raised by the outdoors. I know that makes me sound like I was raised in a barn. It's because I was. But my friends were very talented as a young kid and taught me to hunt and fish. I grew up doing that with my friends, grew up in a small town, either get in trouble or go fishing. So I picked fishing. And I do this podcast because when people give you the tools that enrich your life as an outdoorsy person, what you do with that is pass it along to others. That's the goal here. If I can convince you to go outside and trick a fish into eating something that isn't actually food so that you can then catch it, put it on your table and eat it, I consider it a good day, and I hope you will too. Today's podcast is full of good things. I get to pass on fishing terminology to a good friend of mine, and I do that at his expense for laughs, because the fishing terminology will come in the form of a quiz where my friend will either decide if the term is food or a fishing term, and lingo is always fun to play with, so you'll enjoy that. And then I'll go through some listener questions. If you have questions for the podcast, please send them to me. I would love to answer them. And you can send them to ash@badassfishing.com and put in the subject line podcast, ask your question. I would love to address those things here on the podcast. So we'll go over some of those questions. I will dub the King Salmon of the Week, which is an honorable act or person that's done something fantastic in the outdoors that I want to recognize. And so we'll do that at the end. So let's go ahead and get started with my terminology quiz. Let's call it my friend Renee. Renee helps me with Badass Outdoors, with the social media and all media things related. And he's the perfect person to have a good laugh with. Slash at. I'll let you decide on what that is about. But he's a good sport, so let's give him a ring.
Okay, here we go.
Awesome. Can you hear me well this time?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
So, Renee, I am going to share with you a list of terms, fishing lingo or fair food. And what I would like you to do is decipher the terms, whether they are indeed fair foods or whether they are fishing techniques or fishing terminology. Sound good?
I am ready. Let's do this.
First thing, food or fishing? Fingerling. Is that food or fishing? That's the term, fingerling.
That is food. I think it's some kind of mushroom.
It's actually a fishing term. So it's the term that is used for a small, immature fish.
I totally knew that.
Right. But it totally sounds like fair food. So fair enough.
Definitely. Two fingerlings.
Okay.
Please.
Next one. Kangaroo Spideys.
One more time. Kangaroo Spideys?
Yep, that was right. Kangaroo Spideys.
Yeah, that must be a fish.
It is a fair food. You can eat kangaroo Spideys.
0 out of 0. Yeah.
0. Yep. 0 for 2. Food. Oh, I just said what the next one's going to be. Okay, now I have to do a different term.
I like food. Food is food. Yes.
Bobber dog.
Oh, that's a fishing term. I learned that in the last half a year with you.
Yeah, very good. Very good. I thought someone would go for the dog part, think it's some sort of hot dog thing, but no, you're very good. Okay.
That's silly.
Next term, dinks.
Dinks. I'm going to say food, fair food.
It is a little fish again.
Wow, I am terrible at this. You should have picked someone else to do this.
I'm kind of noticing as we're doing this that all of the terms that we use for little fish actually do sound like food. Fingerlings, dinks.
Or fair food, for that matter.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, deal. Okay, next term. Octodog.
Fair food.
Yes, you got one.
Finally.
Yeah, so they take a hot dog, they split the bottom portion of it into a bunch of, like, what looks like tentacles. So you have an octodog. All right. Yeah. So what's two for five? Two for five. Okay, next term. Buzz bomb. Fair food or fishing?
Buzz bomb. A fishing thing.
Yes, it is. It's a fishing thing.
I completely guessed.
Okay, next term. Zinger.
That's a fishing term.
Yes, it is. Very good. It's a retractable device that you use to hang things off of. If you, like, a lot of fly fishermen use them.
Oh. Okay.
Very good. Okay. Yum bomb.
Yum bomb. Yeah, that sounds yummy. So I must say that's probably a food.
Yeah, very good. Indeed it is.
Nice.
Food. So you are what, four, I can't count, seven? Something like that. You're getting better. You're improving. This is good. Okay, final term. Frisco style.
Frisco style. This is probably like In-N-Out animal style. So I'm going to say it's a food.
No, it is a fishing term. It's the term used when you snag a fish in the butt. And I'm going to be perfectly honest. I pulled that term from the internet. I have actually never heard of that. Being the term for snagging a fish in the butt being Frisco style. But it definitely sounded like food and I thought it was hilarious. So,
well, if you got it from the internet, it must be true.
Somebody probably just made it up for someone like me to come along and be like, Frisco style.
Maybe I went to Urban Dictionary and put that there right before.
You know, I'm going to go make an entry right now. Yeah.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, thank you for going along with my twisted way of teaching you fishing lingo. You will also be quite prepared for the next fair when it rolls around. So,
very good. I am excited for either one and look forward to that.
Awesome. Thanks, Renee.
You got it.
Bye.
Bye.
Now that I've got that out of the way, I like to answer listener questions. So if you have a question, please send it to ash@badashfishing.com and I will address them here on the podcast. So the first question I have is from Dale Esperum. He says, I'd love to hear you talk about weather impacts on fishing and lure, fly color, size selections, and how to adjust accordingly to high or low water flow. Thanks. Cool. Thanks for your question, Dale. So when I think about the weather impacts on fishing, well, I kind of have two trains of thought here. So no matter the river volume, it's important that you remember that fish don't just disappear out of the river if the water's high or low or whatever. They don't spend their time in other places besides the river once they're there, right? So, I mean, even if the water is really high and the river is blown, the fish are still there. They're just not in the usual places. My dog is freaking out. He sees himself in the fireplace, the reflection of the fireplace glass, and is losing his mind. Anyways, so the fish are still in the river, right? The second train of thought here is sometimes breakfast and a coffee really is the only thing to catch. And I mean, in some water stages, it's just really not worth your time to go fishing. But I mean, outside of, you know, the extremes, the really, really high water situations, the really, really low water situations, when the water is high or low, there are ways that you can still catch fish if you know how to fish differently. So first of all, staying on top of weather patterns is not only a good way to ensure you don't go fishing in a flood, but it's also a good way to remember what kinds of weather you dealt with during good fishing days and bad fishing days. So one of the ways that I do that is through websites, and I also use apps. So one of the websites that I think is a must is the NOAA Meteorological Forecast, and I bookmark the 10-day forecast on my iPhone. It's a must because you'll see how much much rainfall you're going to get, as well as what the temperatures are going to be. So the temperature really influences how quickly rivers will rise or fall during periods of rainfall. So if, for example, if you get a whole bunch of rain and you have really warm weather, expect that rivers are going to fill up fast and get dirty. But if you have rain with a lot of with very cold temperatures, the river will take a little bit longer to fill, and it will take a little bit longer to color up as well. So the 10-day meteorological forecast by NOAA, and I save the NWRFC.NOAA.gov weather 10-day forecast. Go to the page, save it in your bookmarks, and use it often. The next one that I use is the USGS Water Data website. I also bookmark that one on my iPhone. So this gives you the volume of the river that you're fishing in cubic feet per second, or CFS. It will tell you if your river is rising in terms of volume, if it's falling in terms of volume, and how quickly that's happening. So you can kind of make that call the night before. Am I going to go fishing? Well, you know, the river's dropping pretty fast, so maybe I'll show up because it'll be within fishable range by, you know, by the time morning rolls around. Or, you know, the fishing probably won't work out tomorrow because the river's high and it doesn't show any sign of dropping. And because I downloaded that app that I'm about to tell you about, I know that I'm going to get rain, so don't go fishing. So that's what you can use that for. And that website is the waterdata.usgs.gov. That's one to save. So the app that I'm going to tell you about is the River Data app. So the app icon looks like a little white raindrop with a red background if you go to download it. And I think you can get it on Android and iPhone. And I think it's relatively cheap, if not free. And if I have it on my phone, that means it was really cheap, if not free, because I won't pay money for apps. I don't think there's, okay, like $2.99 is like where I draw the line. I don't know what it is about $2.99, but above that, it scares me away. I don't know. Anyways, it allows me to store information of my favorite rivers, and it allows me to view water volume. It provides some of those USGS alerts. So like one time I was on the river fishing and I knew a storm was coming in. Like in the next day or so, I got an alert while I was on the river saying, like, you're about to get like a flash storm right now. And it was really great for me to get my aluminum boat out of the middle of a lake that I was crossing while there's lightning and a thunderstorm going on. So things like that. It gives me maps. It gives me directions to the areas I want to go to, a weather forecast, all of these tips at the tip of your fingers. It's kind of useful. So App Store, download that one on your cell phone. I promise you the River Data one is great. You won't regret it. It's not glitchy or anything like that. So enjoy that one. Anyways, so kind of back to the question, what are some of the things that you change? So here's the deal. When I'm fishing in high water, what I have on my mind is where are the fish going to be now that the water's higher and likely a lot faster? And how am I going to get fish to notice my presentation? So, I mean, if you have high and especially dirty water, the challenge is getting things in front of the fish where they are and to where they can see it. So, like the first thing I'll consider is coloring up. So what I mean by that is I'm probably not going to use a lot of neutral or natural colors. This is when I pull out the hot, bright pink, the neon oranges, the really, really bright neon level colors. So color up. The other thing that I do is size up. So if I'm using like plugs, maybe I'm using bigger plugs. If I'm using, you know, like yarnies, I'm using bigger yarnies. If I'm using, I mean, pretty much anything, any technique that you would use, I would use a bigger version of it. I would size up. And the idea is to get the fish's attention, right? I mean, if they can't see it, what chances do you have? You have none. And then plugs are really good in this actual situation because one, you can color up, you can size up, but you also get the rattling motion of a plug too. So, I mean, you have lots of different ways that you're getting a fish's attention and you're in high water. So it's something that can really dive down and get to where fish may be. So, and a tip, if you are going to a river and the water's really high, when you're trying to figure out, like, hey, where am I going to find fish? I always tell people, as soon as you step to the river, look straight down at your feet. It's usually the banks of the river. So fish kind of push out towards the banks of the river in high river volume situations. So what you want to look for is softer water that they can lay in more easily. Fish are kind of actually lazy. So if you kind of think like, oh, I'm a lazy fish and I want to hang out in some softer water and that sort of thing and, you know, wait for this river situation, this flood situation, whatever to pass, look for soft pockets of water. One of my best examples of this is I was fishing with one of my friends. His name is Aaron. And I was on my raft on the Queets River. And the river was just nearly blown. We knew it was going to be a pretty close call. It was pretty chocolatey. It was a little bit higher than I like to fish it, but I knew it was still possible. Because like I said, it's not like the fish disappear when the water conditions are bad. They're just in other places now. And we were fishing this place where, you know, I'd been fishing there every single day. I knew where these fish were going to be, the general area, but I wasn't exactly sure like how they were going to shift according to the river volume now. So as I'm floating through this area, I know there's fish around. I see some fish rolling around. And so we start fishing really hard these areas where we're seeing signs of fish. I mean, a fish is rolling. There's a fish there. This is good, useful information. Am I right? So we're fishing this area, not a single bite. And we finally did get these fish to go, but it was only if we cast right into this soft water pocket right before this little seam that comes off of like a rock on the riverbank. And if you didn't cast just in the right spot, you had zero chance whatsoever. And we were using golf ball sizes of row of eggs to get these fish's attention. And that was really the key. Soft pocket of water. Look at your feet if you're walking down to the river. Size up, color up. Get the fish's attention. This is what you do in high water. Now, fishing low water. So what I mean by low water is the volume is significantly less than whatever the normal stages of the river. And it's probably a lot clearer in this situation. And these, you know, this happens in the summertime. This kind of happens in the wintertime too, when there's no rain, waters get low. You do almost exactly the opposite as high water. Go figure, right? So I usually color down. And what I mean is I'm using more neutral or natural colors that aren't so intrusive, because I don't want to give myself away or scare fish with something that's too intrusive, because that can happen in low water situations. Low water situations, you need to go into straight ninja mode. You are ninja coming through the woods. You are ninja walking down the trail, and you are ninja looking for the fish. Ninja color down when you're trying to fish for these fish in low water. So color down. And then the other piece of this is size down too. Look natural. Don't give yourself away. And when you are using techniques, it's okay to use intrusive things. But if you decide that you are going to use something more colorful or bigger, or let's say worms or jigs, whatever you do, use the least intrusive technique that you have and work your way towards the more intrusive technique. So, for example, I would start fishing in low water for steelhead late winter. I would start with a little natural colored bead, and I would, you know, float fish that or drift fish that or whatever. And if, you know, maybe that's not working so well and I want to change it up, maybe I'll use a little bit of a larger bead, or I'll use a more colorful bead. Then maybe I switch to, you know, a dark jig, like a black, or, you know, something not so bright. And then I work my way up to something maybe a little bit brighter. And then maybe I try a worm, and then maybe I try a yarny, and then maybe I try, I don't know, a spoon. I mean, and I think as you're working your way up to the most intrusive thing is going to be something with a lot of movement and a lot of flash. So a spoon is something that I would use kind of as a last case thing, like the last couple casts before I decide, hey, I'm going to move out of this area. You know, I can't get these fish to go, or I don't think anything's around. I would make my last couple casts with a spoon. And I certainly have had success on the spoon in low clear water. As a general rule, I wouldn't start with a spoon, because you can spook fish if they're not like totally aggressive and into it. But don't write it off in low water either. So there's that part. But all in all, you are ninja. So low water, color down, size down, look natural. The least intrusive technique, work your way to the more intrusive technique, be ninja. High water, you're going to color up, size up, get the fish's attention. Plugs are good. Look at your feet for the fish and find the soft pockets of water. And that's what you've, that's kind of the way that I approach high water, low water situations. So thanks for that question. Dale, much appreciated. I hope that helps. If you have any other questions, ash@badashfishing.com, send me an email. I would love to answer it. Next question is from Frederick R. What is your favorite technique for steelies? Is it spinners, flies, eggs? What are you using out there? My favorite technique for steelheading? It's so hard. To be honest, when you go down to the river, there's sometimes just something that seems right. Like you look at it, you're like, I'm going to run a float right back through there. Or I want to drift fish this, you know, run that goes, you know, shoots right through the middle or whatever. And so whatever I think like seems to match my condition, that's probably my favorite thing. But in a perfect world, gun to my head, you can only pick one thing. What is it going to be? I would say I love drift fishing the most. And, you know, it's kind of, it's the art of allowing a bait or another presentation to freely drift or kind of bounce along the bottom of the river. The setup is actually super simple. The actual technique, on the other hand, is a little bit more challenging. So with drift fishing, your main line runs to a swivel, and on like a snap swivel, personally, I use like a stick weight, and then I have a leader that runs to whatever my presentation is. You know, a lot of times I like it to be worms for steelheads. So, I mean, again, the guns to my head, it's drift fishing, and I'm drift fishing with a WFO worm, probably in the nightmare pattern. So whitehead, red body, black tail, actually flip that, reverse it, black head, red body, white tail. There we go. That's what I would be using, but nightmare colors nonetheless. And it's really, drift fishing is such a lost art. To be honest, when I first started fishing, I didn't realize there was anything else besides drift fishing. And so that's just actually what I always did, was drift fishing. That's all I knew. Like float fishing to me was, I remember the first time I saw it, I think it was like 14. I was like, what are they doing? Why do they need bobbers? You can feel what's going on down there. And that's actually really the hard part. That's the challenging piece, is you feel your weight ticking along the bottom of the river and differentiating what is rocks or what is a fish grabbing sometimes can be hard to decipher. But once you feel it and once you have that feel down, you've got it. And drift fishing can be one of your best friends. Love it. So drift fishing, worms, as far as spinners, flies, eggs, I do love fishing with roe, and I do really enjoy, Zilla makes a fantastic bait cure. All of their bait cures are awesome. They make a really nice sweet one for steelhead, and I kind of partnered up with them, and we made kind of a red, kind of an orange mix. It's pretty deadly. So check that out. It's called the Badash Blend, and it's something that I got to help out with a little bit. It works quite well. I love it. I hope you'll love it too if you try it. Let me know if you do. That would be cool to know. And I would say another technique that I really love is a bead under a float. And I love center pinning. Shout out to all my center pin friends out there. There's just something about watching a float dance in the water that makes me a little bit weird just thinking about it. And using a bead that resembles a single little fish egg. And this float fishing style allows you to let the bead swirl and dance through the current just to be picked up by an unsuspecting steelhead. And that is a pretty fun game. So I love doing that on the center pin again. And if you've never center pin and you're like, what the heck is this girl talking about? It is a free spooling reel. So there's no drag to it whatsoever. So your float floats at the exact speed of the river. You get a very natural presentation from center pinning. And when you do hook into a fish, the fight is like mano-a-mano, like one-to-one, you and the fish. The only thing in between you is whatever rod that you have. And that's a pretty cool feeling. So if you ever get the inkling to try center pinning, reach out and I'd be happy to share some information on that, or definitely give it a shot. It's kind of like using a bait caster for the first time. Like, your first day center pinning will not be fun. You will spend a lot of time like picking line apart, but once you get it down, it's, yeah, you'll have it down, riding a bike kind of stuff. Anyways, but a lot of this information, if you want to visit this again, is on my website, badashfishing.com, in the blog section. And I also cover these things on YouTube, a little bit on Instagram too. YouTube, I kind of take the next step to show you how to cook things that you've caught. So if you're into cooking your catch, you'll definitely want to stop by there. So give that a little look-see. And finally, I come to the end of the podcast, and what I like to do is end with what is what I call the king salmon of the week. And I usually dub an honorable act or person each week for something cool that they do in the name of the outdoors. But this week, I'm going to have to, instead of dub a king salmon, I must dub a queen salmon, because it's Women's History Month. While any month is a great time to recognize the strength and resilience of women in the outdoors, this month is especially for you, because especially as outdoor women, long has it been thought of as a man's sport, and that's really not the case. Women are coming out, they're taking over, and to be honest with you, if I didn't have the outdoors as a part of my life, I don't know like where I would be without that. And I am so thankful to my single mom. Shout out to all of the single moms that raised me to believe that there are no differences between men and women, that if I want to go fish, if I want to go hunt, if I want to ride wheelies in the front yard on my little quad, I can go do all of those things. And I appreciate the empowerment that she gave me to go out and tackle whatever I want. And shout out to all of the moms, the women that fearlessly go out and chase adventures of their own. I like what people say. I like the saying that fish don't discriminate, so neither should we. Maybe a good thing to keep in mind, but Maya Angelou said it best when she said, each time a woman stands up for herself, without knowing it possibly, without claiming it, she stands up for all women. And that is a wonderful message. With that, we come to the end of the podcast. Please rate this podcast, review it. I would love to know what you think. I would love to see those 5 stars piling up. Much appreciated to that. You can also find me on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, Badash Outdoors. Thanks so much for listening. Send your questions to ash@badashfishing.com. And with that, we disembark, and I will see you next Wednesday. Bye-bye.